Welcome to Mama Tales, a podcast on our collective motherhood journey. I'm your host, Sally Kuria. Last week, we started on Penny's story, an incredibly vulnerable story on loss, but finding the beauty in all of it. If you have not listened to that first, I would encourage you to start there before you listen to this, so that you have a bit of context on the story that she'll share today. I know that the story can be incredibly hard to listen to, because it is every parent's nightmare. But experiences like this open up our minds and hearts to everything that can happen as we try to navigate this journey of motherhood. Just like last time, I do want to put out a disclaimer on this episode. If you cannot handle stories on loss right now, give this one a skip. But if you're looking for support or trying to figure out how best to support someone who's going through pregnancy loss, this might be a very useful episode for you. In the last episode, she shares about her deep sense of nurturing that made her aspire to become a mom. When she first got pregnant, she had a miscarriage at 8 weeks, but found enough support and courage to try again. That's when they gave birth to their first son and a daughter who came 2 years later. In this episode, we pick up her story on her fourth pregnancy. Before we ended the episode, she had just taken some tests that were probably going to confirm what she was afraid of. That her baby was not doing well. Here's what's coming up.
So he's like, yeah, I don't think your baby will last 24 weeks. But it's, you don't know. At this point, it's like, you don't know if she will. But even if she will, she might not have a good quality of life outside of the womb. So you could either just go through the pregnancy, see how far you go. Or you can at this point terminate the pregnancy. Oh gosh, so we were in such a limbo. We're like, now we don't know what to do. I remember I came home, I had to drive back all the way home alone, crying, COVID. It was just madness.
We will get into that in a minute, but first some announcements, or rather just one announcement. Like I said last week, I will be hosting an event in celebration of Endometriosis Awareness Month. This will be an in-person event and will take place in Nairobi on the 26th of March from 5 p.m. And I want to officially invite you to it. If you suffer from endometriosis or any other menstrual health condition and their effects, I think that this could be a very beneficial session for you. I will not be doing this alone. From next week, I will be sharing Elsie's story, an endometriosis survivor who has trusted this platform with her story of navigating this condition. She also shares about its effects on her journey towards motherhood. We'll also be sitting down with Dr. Charles Muteshi, an endometriosis and fertility specialist based in Aga Khan Hospital, to discuss what options of treatment and management exist for women going through this condition. Please find more details about this event in the link in the show notes. Remember to register to secure your spot. It is free entry. When Penny was 20 weeks pregnant, she went in for an anatomy scan. It is the perfect time to really analyze a fetus, check in on their development, and most importantly, find out if there's anything wrong with them. At some point in her pregnancy, Penny felt like there was something definitely wrong with her baby, but she couldn't quite put a finger on it. A visit to an ultrasound tech confirmed those feelings.
So me and my hubby are there like, oh, Jesus, what is this? So anyway, so this was 20 weeks. So I go in, 21 weeks. I was around 21 weeks. So I go in for the big ultrasound in this hospital. And then there, the doctors were so nice. The ultrasound tech was like, he even first asked, are you alone? I'm like, yeah, I had to come alone. My husband is with the kids and all of these COVID protocols. He's like, oh, is your husband nearby? I was like, oh God, what are you saying? So he's like, yeah, so unfortunately your baby has a condition called sijui, oh gosh, AMC, arthrogryposis, something, multiplex, whatever. So he showed me the picture on the ultrasound. What they were like, so what happens in this condition is that the baby has not developed properly in the womb. So basically the head was like bent all the way backwards. The limbs were all folded, like the legs were like folded in. Oh my gosh. And then he goes on to say, she might not make it past 24 weeks. So I remember asking, it's a girl? I was like, oh, I immediately texted my husband, it's a girl, because now, you know, now is when we could tell the gender. And my husband wasn't there. And oh gosh, it was a tough time. I'm even getting like my mambo jumbo in my mind, just trying to remember the whole thing. So he's like, yeah, I don't think your baby will make last 24 weeks. But it's, you don't know. At this point, it's like, you don't know if she will, but even if she will, she might not have a good quality of life outside of the womb. So you could either just go through the pregnancy, see how far you'll go, or you can at this point terminate the pregnancy. Oh gosh, so we were in such a limbo. We were like, now we don't know what to do. I remember I came home, I had to drive back all the way home alone, crying, COVID. It was just madness. So I tell my husband, he breaks down, we break down, we are like, what is this? You know, now he's telling us all these things. The baby has all these things going on. So we are like, okay, we're just going to let it be. Let's see how far the pregnancy goes. But sure enough, after like 2 weeks, 3 weeks, so now I was 24 weeks, I went into early labor. And what happened is I just started contracting. They were like, just come into the hospital. We don't know if your baby is going to come out alive. It might be a stillborn. So at this point, I went into the hospital. My husband, so at least we had friends who were able to stay with our kids overnight. So I went in, and it was, for me, I remember going in, and you know, you're seeing a mom coming out with a car seat. I mean, the father going in with a car seat, and you know, you're feeling like, oh my God, will I come out with a baby? This is 24 weeks. I doubt even they'll be, I don't know, it'll be an early labor. So we go in, they admit me. And so it was May 25th, 2020. I remember she came at 6:51, but it was a stillborn. So she came, she was sleeping. I always say she came and she rested in the arms of Jesus, because she came and it was a stillborn basically. But I went through labor, like I literally pushed. So it was for me one of those things. I was like, wow, I don't know what to expect. Will it be painful? So it was tough. It was tough. It was COVID. People are in masks. So she came and she was born sleeping. And we named her Angelique Njeri, who is my shosho is Njeri. And Angelique, just because she just got her angel wings on that same day.
That's tough. I can imagine just the fact that you had to go through, at least hear that news alone, and just, you know, try and figure out like why, you know, I can imagine the question is just like, why would this be happening? I'm so sorry that had to happen that way for you guys.
So here's the thing. They were saying, oh, it could be genetic, this thing, atherogryposis, or it could be spontaneous. So it was those things, you're right. You just never know why. We just asked why. Why us? Like one in 330,000 kids gets this condition. And I think there's not so much awareness. It's an interesting condition. I'll share the link with you if anyone is interested in knowing more or has a child who has this condition. But there is support out there for this condition.
That would be very helpful, because that's the other thing. You're like, I can imagine even just getting into labor at 24 weeks. You know, you just, you're like, how do you even, and then for someone like you who's gone through labor a couple of times, like, you know, I can imagine like what you're saying, like you didn't know if this would be painful or not. If did you get to like see her and hold her?
Oh yeah. So I've skipped like the most beautiful part of the whole story. How can I? So yeah, so the moment she was born asleep, her eyes were closed. So because of this atherogryposis condition, I think, so immediately she came, I remember the nurse, let out a, so I think maybe because of maybe the head being back or the limbs, I think it was very like, so she said, okay. So she had told us, so I think they had prepared us, which was good because it was a, like a high risk pregnancy unit. They had told us before, so when she's born, we'll take her first and like swaddle her before we bring her. So I think that's what they did. So I think they went with her and then now they brought her, the nurse brought her back when she was now like wrapped in a swaddle, but we could hold her. She was so tiny. She was just like a palm. Her eyes were closed, but we could hold her finger. I remember at that point, my husband also, he just like, the tears came, me too. I was just like, oh my God, this beautiful thing. But here's the thing, she was so peaceful. She was warm, of course, at the time still, because she had just been born. I could still feel, I was like, oh God, she's still warm. So the nurse took pictures. We took pictures with her. She had valishad her carbonate. But she was a stillborn. She was so beautiful. So then they took her away for the night. Then we rested. Then the next day, the chaplain came. So they brought her back in like a small basket. And then we did like a service there in the room. And then she was like, so at this point, she was now cold. Oh my gosh, it was such a transition. I was like, oh my God, she's now cold. And I think for me, the hardest part was leaving the hospital and knowing your baby is there. Like, you know, leaving the hospital without your baby is one thing. And leaving your baby when she's passed on is like, oh, okay, I won't see her again. So we left her. So, I mean, we were discharged and everything. And then so they gave us the option. They were like, we could either bury her, like give her a little like service and give her a small car box, or we could cremate. So we actually chose to cremate her, imagine. So we have her little ashes in a small car. And it's so tiny. And then they put her in a teddy bear. I mean, it was like a movie. Me, I'm telling you, I was going to like, me and my husband, we are going to like, they were telling us, okay, you can go to this funeral home to pick a, you can pick a small car urn and the teddy bear. So I'm going in there, I'm thinking, hey, Penny, we are going into a funeral home for our baby. You know, you're like, what is this? What is this, dear Lord? But the beauty of it all is that, you know, we honored her and yeah, she's in a teddy bear. It's a bit weird, I know, but it's, it's. No, you asked, Sally.
And you're a very great, thank you for sharing that, like, because you didn't have to, you know what I mean? But it's paints such a picture, because this is part of the stuff we talk about, like, it's not spoken enough, right? So you wouldn't even know what to expect, how to feel, and I feel like even just your strength in talking about this can be very encouraging to a lot of people, you know, like if you ever find yourself in that position, yeah, like there's a possibility of finding some beauty in it, which, you know, would be difficult to even imagine how.
And for me, I think you're right, the beauty for me and for us, me and my husband, is that we're like, this baby, you can't explain where this baby has gone. They are with our Savior Jesus. So we are believers. And for me, I was just like, this baby has gone to heaven, right? And for whatever your beliefs are, like, there's something bigger. Like, this life, tunapitia tu, like, life comes and goes, people are born and die. And for me, I was just like, this beautiful soul was just not even worthy of this life of suffering. So there you go, such beauty in the suffering. And it was hard. It was grief. I went through therapy, and it's loss. It's just grieving the loss. And to tell you that I have today a 9-month-old, like, I mean, I'm just crazy. Even our friend was like, "Guy, you guys are going for another baby after." Imagine.
Yeah, because that's even the other question. I'm like, how do you even move from that point, which feels like a pretty low point, right? And just like, how do you even pick yourself up to do it again?
Yeah. We waited a bit. So I think that was 2020, COVID. COVID ikapita, we just kind of started going through the healing process and grief, but also just knowing that I think I felt it's a feeling. I think as a mom, when you know you're not done, whether it's physically, your body is just like your mama, those mama eggs, those little eggs, you're just, your mama heart is like, I just feel I want another baby to hold. And someone can might look at it as being selfish. Honestly, there was a quote that I saw online that was like, hey, maybe I was being selfish to now try to have another child. But really not. I think I just felt, God, I just want another human to love. And so then 2020, Kaisha, 21, 22, I told my hubby, hey, hubby, my husband is like the best. He's the best husband. He's so good. So I'm like, let me do another one. He's like, hey, Pens, we are done. We're Pens, we are done. Two is enough. If you ask him even today, he was like, two is enough. But right now with our little boy, he is like, oh, God, our life, we would not be the same without this third child. So he was like, okay, sawa, basi. So 2022, we started trying again. So I had put in an IUD because I was like, hey, wacha tufunge hii chapter kidogo. I think, you know, just instinctively I was like, God, protecting myself from like feeling that pain again of going through pregnancy. So I was like, I put in a 5-year IUD. I'm like, I'm done with this pregnancy deal. No. But then after like a year to now 2022, ndio nikatoa. I was like, let's try again. I think I'm ready. So we did all the tests. So we did a test just to kind of, they were like, okay, maybe have you talked to genetics? They were like, have you talked to the genetics people? Which we did. They were like, it's very random. Like chances of it happening again are slim. But I was like, come by and by, let's go. So anyway, 2022, we tried again and we were pregnant. So we were due our son, our last born now, look at me saying last born, like now I'm sure, imi hapa ndio safari imeisha. So he was due in June, so 2023, sasa this year that has just passed. So he was due in June. I mean, his was now another rainbow baby. Beautiful pregnancy. I was just happy at work. So he was due May. No, he was due in June of 2023. So like, also here's the thing, back to that instinct during pregnancy. And I think moms who listen to this podcast or dads as well, I think you just, there's a way you know your body. By the time you're pregnant and all, there's a certain, anyway, so me, what I'm saying is throughout the pregnancy, I was like, this child is going to come early. I kept saying it. I kept telling my family, I don't know, I have a feeling this one, 40 weeks, Simone. And sure enough, around 30 weeks, 32 hapo, I start feeling contractions. Then I remember, I would go to the appointment. They would say, oh, are you having contractions? I'm like, hapo 30 weeks. I'm telling them, yeah, but you guys, these are not just regular contractions, that is a pregnancy. Then they're like, oh, yeah, because you've been pregnant, you know, a couple of times. I don't know. Me, medical system, that's why I am such a believer in. Anyway, I'll tell you that I was dreaming of a home birth before this baby showed us dust coming a month before. So I was they're like, you know, your body knows what it's doing. You know, you've been pregnant, so your uterus is kind of doing those practice contractions. Just go home, take it easy. And nikawaambia, okay, sawa, you guys are the whatevers. But let me tell you, ultimately, you know your body. So a month before, so my husband's birthday was May 3rd. He turned 40. He's like, so we had a nice car, a small car dinner. And at that time, we were in Canada. So he's like, okay, let me go. I'm going to Boston. He had planned this trip. We had planned it like a while back. I'm going to Boston. We are meeting my sister-in-law is still in Boston and my cousins. It's a month to delivery. You know, as we are seeing, June 14th, Ikombali. You May 3rd, after we did our small family dinner for his 40th, sasa May, the week after he went, sasa po May, when did he leave? May 8th. He left May 8th. Was it May? Whatever, he left around the first week in May. So he goes on a Thursday night. shock on me like this. I'm there putting the kids to bed on Friday. And on Tuesday, I had seen, met the OBGYN. On Tuesday, I met the OBGYN. I told him, hey, doctor, I don't know. You're saying my due date is June 14th? I don't know. I'm just feeling contractions. Ah, Baharakaraka is like, okay, let me check. Okay, you just continue. Nini. Tuesday. Friday, husband has left on Thursday. Friday, I put the kids to bed. I'm there putting them to sleep. Pregnant there at 30. I'm a month out, whatever a month out is. Whatever weeks. We are there lying in bed. They have slept. Even me, I'm dozing off because now I'm tired. I'm heavy. I'm sleepy. I just feel water has broken. Like the movies. Water is breaking. It's 10 o'clock. It's Friday. Husband is in the US. Me, I'm in Canada. It's 10 o'clock at night. We have two children here sleeping in bed. Okay, sasa sijui ni ambulance. Is it like the movies? You know, they say the more you have had babies, the faster the babies come. I was like, no. I remember jumping out of the bed. I was like, no. This can't be happening. This can't be happening. My water has burst. I am leaking. I was like, okay, calm down. The kids were sleeping, thank God. So I immediately called my hubby. He's like, he was there. They were watching a Celtics basketball game. I'm like, Denz, are you at a place you can talk? Okay, go to the bathroom. I was like, my water has broke. So I'm going to call our neighbor. Very good friend of ours called Lisa, family friend. So I'm going to call Lisa. Then we go to the hospital. I mean, she'll stay with the babies. Mini pelekwe hosi. So my husband is there. Okay, let me, you know, so long of the short of the long, he came back now the next day or the next day, Saturday. But me, in the meantime, nikapelekwa hosi that night. Okay, so I went to the hospital. The ambulances came, you know, there they come, dramatic. It's in Canada where we live. So they came, two ambulances, you know, because they are hearing, how many weeks are you? How many babies do you have? I'm like, I'm 30, whatever weeks, I don't know, 36 weeks? Because I was 35 weeks. I was like, I'm 35 weeks, I have three babies. Okay, we are sending ambulances now. Aish, I'm like, relax, the baby is not coming. But you know them, they're like, So anyway, the ambulances came. They were there trying to settle me down. I was like, come on, mtoto atakuja, let's just do this thing. So we went in the ambulance, thank God. So I was there like, where are there two ambulances? They're like, oh, we usually bring one for the baby in case. I was like, aye, okay, wow, that is interesting. So anyway, so we went to the hosi. The baby, of course, wasn't coming, but my water is just there dripping. I'm just like, wow. I hadn't had any contractions. Like, there were no contractions. That's why I was like, what is happening, dear Lord? So anyway, we get to the hospital. They admit me. So this was now that night, Friday night, we were in the room. So now my water has broke. You're thinking, God, is this baby now just floating around with no protection? Like, you don't know what is an early preterm labor, what it looks like. And again, anyone here who has had a preterm labor, this is me. I was like, what is happening? Is this baby coming? So anyway, so I was admitted. They did the test. They're like, okay, you're not yet dilated. You're only 2 centimeters. So that's good. It means the baby is still not pushing on the whatever to come out. So anyway, I got a room. My husband came the next day. Now imagine he flew back. The whole trip, he was canceled. The way he was so excited for it. But anyway, he's like, babe, baby is coming. So anyway, he came. And then 2 days later, a day later. So this was Monday. Was it Monday or Sunday? Monday night. I start feeling contractions. Now, of course, they had to admit me because me, I thought that, oh, maybe I can go home. But they're like, no, your uterus, your amniotic fluid has mwagikad. You can't go home because we don't know. Delivery is imminent. So I had to stay in the hospital for the while. They're just monitoring. So they did an ultrasound on Sunday. Like, they wanted to see, is the head down? Because from the last ultrasound, the head was down. But then they do the ultrasound, they see the baby is now feet first. So I was like, oh no. So what does that mean? It means we might have to do a C-section in case you go into labor. But if the head turns, well and good. So I was like, I was so disappointed because I was hoping that he would still come like head first and have a vaginal. So Monday comes, I start feeling contractions Monday night. those contractions are pregnancy. I was like, oh, this baby is coming. They were tight, painful, labor ndio hii inakuja. So at this point, I remember even asking the doctor, is there a chance that I could still have a regular vaginal, like just push the baby? He's like, oh, chances are you're still. And sure enough, they did another ultrasound. He was now feet first still. And they were like, that would be dangerous because of the cord pulling or things. So that night I was like, okay, sawa. So now my husband had gone home to stay with the kids. So anyway, I say all this because, I mean, just being abroad and not having support is not having family around. Like, I'm just trying to also highlight the challenges of not having that family, close family support. So that night it was now like 10, 12. Thank God the doctor on call was the OBGYN. So they're like, hey, my contractions were like every 2 minutes, this baby is coming. So they're like, okay, we're going to have to take you to the OR. We're just going to have a C-section. So I was so like, okay, I was feeling a bit like, just like your last podcast, you're not prepared for a C-section. You don't know. It's a surgery. There's no reading up you can do. There's no like whatever. And then I'm like, oh God, this was not how I had anticipated this last pregnancy. In my mind, I was like, I had wanted a home bath. I wanted lights, the music, but I was just like, you know what? Let me just lean into this, trust that they know what they're doing. So we went in and through the OR. So thank God he was like, because the baby is small, I'll make a small incision, because now he's a preemie. So he's now like 34 weeks. The incision will be small for the C-section. So I was like, okay, fine, I guess. I don't even know big, small. So I went in, wakanipatia the full C-section deal. So it was my first experience with a C-section. So they did that. They did the incision. They were there like, is your husband around? I was like, no, he's home with the babies, because this was like 2 a.m. So there our little rainbow baby came, our other second rainbow baby at 34 weeks. He's called Eli. He's now 9 months. He's just joy. I mean, after the C-section, of course, he was taken to the ICU, neonatal ICU. And he was, you know, just because bado, you know, my lungs, my things. Now he's 9 months. He's thriving. And yes, that has been the journey of this pregnancy. So that's why I'm telling you, we are done. Yeah.
I had to go to the NICU with my second born. He had a bit of breathing issues after birth and jaundice, which earned him a night at the NICU. To be honest, that has to be one of the most humbling experiences of my life. Never had I seen babies so small, so fragile, and mothers with immense strength trying to share that with their little babies.
The NICU experience, and anyone, the NICU experience changes you for, we were there for a week, not even long, because some moms stay for a long time, and it's an experience that you'd never think, especially after you've had kids at term, you're like, tunajua this thing, how it goes, we'll go home with the baby, utaleta car seat, we go, we celebrate. But leaving the hospital and leaving your child in the hospital. So now we've had to do it twice. So with our first, who now we had to leave, who was stillborn, and then now our baby in the NICU. So now you see it's after a C-section. Let me tell you, you're coming back to the hospital after a C-section. You're feeling like this is what it felt like. It was like a knife was being put in my back, like someone every time I walked, because now you see I had to walk a key distance to get to the NICU. It felt like someone was grating my back with a knife. It was so painful. But for me, I think, you know, you're feeling that mama instinct, that mother instinct kicks in so much. Mama bear, you're like, I have a child somewhere who I need to protect. You're like, I need my cubs. So I was like, I will walk with this pain. I remember there was a time I was even pushing the wheel. Someone was helping me push the wheelchair because I just couldn't walk. Because now you're going back to the NICU. And for me, I was like, this is that first week. I need to be on top of this milk. So the thing that I did, I was like, I was pumping around the clock. I was like at home. The kids were in school. Also, here's the other thing that I totally forgetting. Now that my husband stepped up, you know, now the kids are still going to school. I remember... So before I was discharged, he was now there getting the kids ready, brushing my daughter's hair, our daughter's hair, getting them to school. So, you know, so you have to explain to the kids, the older ones, like, why isn't the baby home? Why isn't mommy home? So now you're just kind of telling them, you know, the baby has to be looked after a bit just to make sure the baby is fine. So it was also those layers of having to explain to them, but also more so for me, the milk supply, I was like, this is the gift that I can give this little baby of mine. So I was pumping. I was like, "Io colostrum, we are not losing this milk." So the experience in the NICU, you're right, it's jarring because you're seeing different babies. My preemies, they are so little, like the size of a hand. They are there trying to breastfeed. Basically, the baby is like your palm, so small. And moms are in different stages of the journey, you know. And with NICU, it's like you graduate. So, you know, you're seeing that one is there. So you leave the NICU when your baby is able to drink milk on their own, like a kachupa. They can hold, they can... So basically, they're trying to keep these babies alive. And you don't realize how fragile life is until you've been in the NICU. Like, they're trying to even just regulate their temperature. Like, when you tore them from the incubator, but skin to skin is like the lifesaver. So they were like, just put that baby on your skin. What else? So even us, he had jaundice. So he was under those lights. You're just like, so every day you come and see, maybe like he's off the lights. You're like, oh gosh, that's one step closer to home. And I think that's the journey in the NICU. Like, you're just going one step closer to home. So you're going for the feeds at lunchtime. Then you go back home, then you come at night. But it was such a tender, precious moment for me because I was just like, especially at night, I would like the nighttime feeds because now I would remove him from the incubator and then hold him kidogo. And now because he was on those lights, I couldn't hold him for too long. I mean, you just realize the value of the how it's such an honor to be able to hold your baby when they are born and go home with them. But, you know, just, you're right, being with other moms. So even like I keep in touch with like two of them, you know, because you have, you're like, oh, we were NICU babies. Just sharing the journey. Like, how's your baby sleeping now? Are they burping? Because they have trouble with gas, you know, because things haven't actually developed vile, right? So their challenges are a bit different at the beginning with reflux and all of that. So it was just helpful to share with other moms in the NICU the experience. And I think all through this podcast, I'm just hearing a lot of shared experiences that we are not alone in this motherhood and pregnancy journey. So he's now learning to crawl. I mean, so what the doctor said, so with the preemie, and this is just for anybody who's going or whatever, but so the first year, they are milestones. Like, don't expect them to be at the they are doing the things that at 6 months. So, but with him, I think here's what I'm learning, that every child is there, develops at their own pace. So like now I look at him and I was like, hey, my son at this age, he was like starting to walk. So 9, 10 months. So him, he's not yet there. So I think also as a mom, just being able to put aside our expectations and hopes for milestones. And the comparison, like, hey, where, hujafanya hii bado, where you're not like this child. That's also something that I'm learning as we go. So we'll see how he goes. But so far he's thriving. He is thriving. He's eating. He is doing all the things.
Penny and her husband have lived through a lot of our fears and nightmares. Before we wrapped up, I asked her to share some words or tips for anyone finding themselves dealing with this type of loss.
What advice? I don't know if it's even advice or just like reminding you of that pregnancy and being a mom and being a dad is like, as much as we have all these great books, great podcasts like yours, all I'll say is just lean into your inborn human intuition as a human being, as someone you have it so much in you to your body has not failed you. Number one, if you're just feeling like this is just the end of it for me, as a mom, as a dad, you are just made for this moment. And you know so much more than all the books, all the podcasts. like just even let me not say the doctors, because they are so trained in, they are able to recognize when there's danger, but ultimately just listen to your intuition. If you feel something is not right, or that I'm not getting the kind of care that I think just know that you know so much, like you're so, be in tune, stay in tune to yourself and to each other, your partner, your whoever, but and just listen into those small cues, and your body has not failed you. You will bounce back, and I liked your Instagram reel on bouncing back. It's not even bouncing back. It's just you will, in that season of where you are, you will know what to do in that moment. So, gosh, I've talked a lot. I hope it even makes sense. I've gone around in circles.
And thank Penny for sharing her incredibly vulnerable journey with us. She is a founder of Screen and Kids and is a believer of a slow childhood. She describes herself as a guardian to children's emotional safety, and through her work, she helps families with little kids figure out a healthy interaction with technology. If you're interested in what she does, please reach out to her. I will leave all the details in the show notes of this episode. You can also check out her website, screenandkids.com. And that's N, not and. Don't worry, I've linked it in the show notes of the episode. Next week, we kick off Elsie's incredible fight with endometriosis. Remember, you can show support to this podcast by sharing it with a friend or two, or by offering monetary donations. Details on all of this can be found in the show notes of this episode. All right, see you next week. Bye. Thank you.